Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantikoti Vaishnava Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Pranasiko Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shri Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaita Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Priyananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamane. Namaste Sarasvati Deva. Gauravani Pacharani Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskachyade Sitarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sadvajatam Sahaganam Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Cha Panchakalpa Chupishcha Kipasandaviya Bhattapati Tanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavayo Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's May 25th, 2022 in Hawaii over the internet. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 31, Text 22. Shri Ammanu Charatim Tadarinascha. Vipadapatim Vibhudamscha. Okay, I got this wrong. Let me get this again. Shri Ammanu Charatim Tadarinascha. That's not right either, and I practiced this. Shriyam. The goddess of fortune.
The goddess of fortune.
Anucharatim.
Anucharatim.
Who follows him?
Who follows him?
Tat.
Tat.
Of her.
Of her.
Artinaha.
Artinaha.
Those who aspire to get the flavor.
Those who aspire to get the flavor.
Cha. And Dvipadapatin.
Dvipadapatin.
Rulers of the human beings.
Rulers of the human beings.
Vibhudan.
Vibhudan.
Demigods.
Demigods.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Yet.
Yet.
Because.
Because.
Swapurnaha.
Swapurnaha.
Self-sufficient.
Self-sufficient.
Nah.
Nah.
Never.
Never.
Budgety.
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 Cares for.
Cares for.
Nija.
Nija.
Own. Richa Varga.
Richa Varga.
On his devotees.
On his devotees.
Tantraha.
Tantraha.
Dependent. Katam.
Katam.
How.
How.
Amun.
Amun.
Him.
Him.
Ud Vistrajet.
Ud Vistrajet.
Can give up.
Can give up.
Puman.
Puman.
A person.
A person.
Kritagna.
Kritagna.
Grateful.
Grateful.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, he becomes dependent on his devotees. He does not care for the goddess of fortune, nor for the kings and demigods who are after the favor of the goddess of fortune. Where is that person who is actually grateful and will not worship the personality of Godhead? Srila Prabhupada's purport. Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is worshipped by all materialistic men, including big kings and demigods in heaven. Lakshmi, however, is always after the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though he does not require her service. Brahma Samhita says that the Lord is worshipped by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, but the Supreme Lord does not require service from any of them, because if he so desires, he can produce millions of goddesses of fortune through his spiritual energy, the pleasure potency. This very Personality of Godhead, out of his causeless mercy, becomes dependent on the devotees. How fortunate, then, is a devotee who is thus favored by the Personality of Godhead. What ungrateful devotee will not worship the Lord and enter into his devotional service? Actually, a devotee cannot forget his obligation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead even for a single moment. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that both the Supreme Lord and his devotee are rasagna, full of transcendental humor. The mutual attraction between the Supreme Lord and his devotee is never to be considered material. It always exists as a transcendental fact. There are eight types of transcendental ecstasy, known as bhava, anubhava, sthaibhava, and so on, and these are discussed in the Nectar of Devotion. Those who are unaware of the position of the living entity and the Supreme Person Krishna think that the mutual attachment between the Lord and his devotees is a creation of the material energy. Factually, such attachment is natural, both for the Supreme Lord and for the devotee, and it cannot be accepted as material. Shriyam manu charatim tad artinas cha dvipad apatim vibhudams chayat swapurna swabhajati nijabrita vargat tantra katam amun ujvishrajet pumam kritagna. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, he becomes dependent on his devotees. He does not care for the goddess of fortune, nor for the kings and demigods who are after the favors of the goddess of fortune. Where is that person who is actually grateful and will not worship the personality of Godhead? So a grateful person will worship the personality of Godhead. It's kind of a funny way to put it. So Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport that the affection between the Lord and his devotees is natural. There is a natural attraction between the Lord and his devotees. And he makes some very interesting points here. That the Lord is self-sufficient. He becomes dependent on his devotees out of love. And so the devotee feels very humble and very grateful, which gives a joy in service, and that this natural relationship is eternal between the Lord and the jiva. So the Lord is self-sufficient. He doesn't need Lakshmi. We all need Lakshmi. I mean, of course, in ISKCON, we use the word Lakshmi as a way of saying money. Like we would have, you know, book points and Lakshmi points. How much money did you collect by selling books? And, you know, we make announcements in temples of how many books have been distributed and how many Lakshmi points. And I'm sure one reason for doing that is to act as kind of a euphemism for new people so they don't realize that we're talking about money. But Lakshmi means, of course, a lot more than just money, although there's many paintings of Lakshmi with coins coming out of her hands. But it means all opulences, all kinds of prosperities. Of course, there's six categories of prosperities. Right? There's Shri, which means Lakshmi Devi in general, but it also means beauty and charismatic leadership. And this is beauty in visual beauty, auditory beauty, olfactory beauty, all different kinds of beauty. So then there's also virya. Virya means strength and health, virility, fertility. So that's also another kind of prosperity. And then there's, of course, gyan, the prosperity of knowledge and understanding. And vairagya, the prosperity of freedom. Aishvarya, which Prabhupada usually just translates as wealth. Literally, it means leadership. Ishvara. So there's six different kind, and then yasa. Yasa means righteous fame. You're famous for doing good things. So yasa implies that you have a community. You have a family, you have a community. So you're surrounded by family and community who revere you for your good actions. So these are all kinds of prosperity. So Krishna doesn't need a goddess of fortune who personifies prosperity in order to be prosperous. In fact, he's creating prosperity. As Prabhupada says here, he can create millions and millions of goddesses of fortune. So he's called Bhagavan. Bhagya means fortune. So he already possesses all fortune. And for us, we need the goddess of fortune to smile on us in order to have any of these types of prosperity. We need her favor. A person can work hard their whole life and not get any kind of prosperity. We see this all the time. Or people can be rich in cash and not have any real prosperity. We also see this. So one needs the grace, the mercy of the goddess of fortune, which is usually accomplished by our good karma. But Krishna doesn't need the grace of the goddess of fortune. The goddess of fortune is his energy. Goddess of fortune is coming from his Ladini Shakti. So he doesn't need anyone to give him anything. Actually, the pure jiva is also, like we say, the pure jiva is Atmarama, also taking pleasure in the self. That's what to speak of God. This example is given, or this logic is given many times, to show that the Lord is self-sufficient, that even the liberated souls, as Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita, it says they have no need to depend on any other living being. Yes? So this is the position of the liberated souls. So how much more so would it be the position of God himself? So if the liberated souls are not dependent on any other living being, if the liberated souls find are up the kama and atmarama, if they're satisfied in their self and they can fulfill all of their own desires, how much more so for the Lord? So how is it that the Lord appears to be dependent on his devotee? I mean, the Lord appears to be dependent on the goddess of fortune. Krishna is begging at the feet of Srimati Radharani for pleasure, for association, for love. And sometimes he makes Radharani angry. It seems like he does it quite intentionally. And then she doesn't want to see him, and so he's begging with Lalita and Vishakha, you know, please let me see Radharani. So he appears to be dependent like that. He appears to be dependent on his parents to feed him. He appears to be dependent on his devotees to serve him. He has, just like an ordinary royal person, and I'm sure this is not so much done today, but it used to be that royalty, they had someone else bathe them and someone else dress them, etc. I'm sure the royalty still has someone else wash and style their hair. But Krishna also does this. You know, he has servants, they wash his clothes, they bathe him, they give him a bath. You know, most of us, we don't have servants bathe us. In fact, we would feel rather awkward to have servants bathing us. You know, we shower ourselves. We bathe ourselves. We don't have servants dress us again. You know, I mean, in modern Western society, having someone else bathe you and having someone else dress you, you feel like you're an invalid or you're disabled or something. You know, it's kind of it's a sign of misfortune instead of a sign of fortune. But formerly, and I'm sure it still goes on in some places, very rich and powerful people, they had people doing all this for them. So Krishna also, he has servants who do all this. He has servants who bathe him and dress him and comb his hair and do his laundry and clean for him and do all these things for him. And he appears to be dependent on these devotees. He appears to be dependent on the devotees' offerings. And often the devotee feels like that. They feel, you know, if I don't cook for Krishna, he won't eat. If I don't make some clothes for Krishna, he won't wash his clothes and sew his clothes, design his clothes. He'll have nothing to wear. You know, that Krishna needs me, that he's dependent on me. The devotee feels like this. So this is quite astonishing, actually. And of course, this is out of love. The Lord puts himself, makes himself apparently dependent on the devotee out of love. And this is not a difficult thing to understand. You know, when people get married in this world, it's not that a person is incapable of living as a single person. But in the marriage, then they appear to depend on each other. The woman depends on the man depends on the woman in so many ways. They depend on the other financially, they depend on the other for, you know, again, cleaning the house, doing the laundry, doing the cooking. In so many ways they appear to be dependent on one another. And you know, you'll see if people got married very young and were like my daughter-in-law's parents got married very young and they were married for a very long time. He died a few years ago. And it was quite an adjustment for her mother and to not have her husband there, that she had become, she had all her adult life, she had lived dependent on her husband, and to find kind of her footing. Of course, she's a capable person, and she's able to take care of herself. But that's my point exactly. Even if we're a capable person and we can take care of ourselves, out of love, we put ourselves in a position of dependence. It appears to be literal that you're dependent on your spouse for this or that. And of course, it may not be literal, but we see parents put themselves apparently under a position of dependence on even their very young children out of love. You know, please bring me that, or please help me with this. And so, of course, that's simply playful. But so we have some conception of this. And the devotee feels, therefore, very grateful. Very grateful. I mean, this is real love. When someone doesn't need you, actually, but they apparently need you out of love. You know, if people actually need you, then there's something there of exploitation. You know, there's some element of exploitation. Well, this person is with me because they need me for something. They want something from me. I was out, I was shopping. Yes, I can't remember if I was, which shop, must have been at Home Depot. And they were playing this song, I'd never heard it before, but they were playing some song about everything you do and every part of you does something for me, something like that. I don't remember exactly. And I was thinking, wow, you know, I love you because your shoulders do something for me. The way you walk does something for me. It gives me something. You know, I'm using you to give me something. I'm trying to get something from you. And again, we all have experience in extreme forms of these relationships, how unpalatable they are. When we feel, oh, somebody's hanging out with me, somebody's writing me, being with me, for themselves, that they're trying to suck something out of me for themselves, to use me for themselves. But with that, there's nothing like that with Krishna, because he's self-sufficient. He doesn't need anything from any jiva. So his apparently putting himself in need is simply charming. And the devotee is so grateful. Oh, I can do something. You know, all of us want to be useful. All of us want to feel that our lives are meaningful. One of the difficulties I have personally found with getting old is seeing how many ways in which I thought I was important and significant in what I was doing and who I was being was actually not so. That, you know, I would work so hard to accomplish this or that, and very soon things would just go back to the way they were before. You know, just like you work really, really hard to make a garden and it's a beautiful garden. And if you neglect it for a month, it just becomes a forest of weeds. Everything just goes back to the way it was before, as if you did nothing. And this is true even with creating huge civilizations. That a few thousand years later, some archaeologists, you know, can dig them up, but they're covered and no one even sees them. There's this whole, like, you know, ruined city under the ground. And everybody's just, and nature has taken it over and is gradually returning it to its elements. And there was no permanent effect. And as I say, as we get older, we tend to see that this is the truth. Yes, but this is an unsettling truth of material endeavor. It's not pleasing. It's kind of depressing, actually, that whatever I do is very temporary, and very soon after I stop doing it, everything reverts back to what it was, as if I had never done anything. And I don't leave some kind of permanent mark on the world in any way. But that's, as I say, it's distressing. You know, we want to do something that has meaning, that has value, and we want to do something that has meaning and value that lasts. In fact, the drive to do something of meaningful value that lasts is one of the strongest urges of a human being. So the fact that Krishna lets us do meaningful, valuable, eternal service for him, although he doesn't need us at all, is a cause of tremendous gratitude. We have this kritagna, a tremendous feeling of gratitude. Now, ordinary religious people emphasize a different kind of gratitude, which Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati writes as being lower than pure devotional service. And that is gratitude for their material life, for the good things in their material life. Now, it's definitely better to be grateful for the good things in your material life than to resent them and complain about them. It's feeling gratitude for, you know, a sunny day and clean drinking water and the ability to walk and is a great contributor to having good physiological and psychological health, to have a habit of gratitude. But it's not, if our gratitude is just like that, it's not really in the realm of pure devotional service. There was a talk I heard some time ago from Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, and he was saying that if you can't chant with love for Krishna, if you can't chant meditating on Krishna and Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, at least chant with gratitude. That this will put you in sattva-gun and it will be a doorway to bhakti. But in and of itself, that kind of gratitude is not bhakti. Again, it's useful. We shouldn't, if we think, well, because it's not directly bhakti, I shouldn't do it, that would be a very big mistake. Being grateful for the general things in our life is a very useful and wonderful habit. But the gratitude that's being talked about here is on another level. The gratitude that's being referred to here is on the level of bhakti. It's that one is unlimitedly grateful for Krishna engaging us in service when he doesn't need it. And this is, it's not like, you know, it's not something fake. Just like, I'm sure we've all gotten presents that we not only didn't need but didn't want. And we were faking our gratitude to the other person. Oh, thank you so much. What a wonderful gift. And then we're just thinking, how do I get rid of this thing? So it's not like that. It's not like Krishna doesn't need us, and you know, our service is an unwanted gift that he's just saying, yes, yes, thank you, thank you. And then he's going, oh man, how can I get rid of this thing? It's not like that. Krishna feels in rasa. Prabhupada refers to the elements of rasa here in this purport. The bhava, anubhava, stai bhava, and vyavichari bhavas, which he doesn't mention, sattvika bhavas. So Krishna genuinely feels dependent on his devotee. Genuinely. Again, it's not like, you know, I really didn't need this. I really had everything I wanted. Why did you give me this? Okay. Yes, thank you. You know, it's not like that. He's genuinely appreciative. Patram pushpam palam twayam yome bhakta prajati tadham bhakti praritam ashnami praritatma. So we have, today is the last day of school in the school year for our local Gurukul. And we're having a little ceremony. The children are going to sing all the songs they've learned, and there's going to be a potluck feast. So that means where everybody brings a prep. So I made a prep with rice. And you know, when Sudama Vipra gave Krishna one grain of rice, poor quality rice, just a grain of low quality, cheap rice, Krishna was genuinely grateful. Deeply grateful. I mean, this is astonishing. Or I've given this example so many times before that I visited this devotee's home one time, and they had some very small deities. Maybe you've seen those little deities of Jagannath. They're kind of on a backboard. Maybe it's 1 inch high, you know, and 2.5 inches long. Half an inch deep, tiny, tiny deities of Jagannath. You couldn't dress them or anything. And so next to those deities, they had a cup of water, which was roughly proportionate. I mean, the cup of water was just tiny. You could fit in this cup one drop from an eyedropper, and then the surface tension of the water caused the water to kind of, you had a concave bubbles of water at the top. I mean, that amount of water would hardly even be noticed by anybody. You just put one drop from an eyedropper on your tongue, you would hardly even notice its existence. So it was actually kind of hard to refill those cups, because there was just this one drop with surface tension. You know, to get it out of the cup and rinse it and refill it was interesting. But I remember seeing that and thinking, when Krishna says, patram pushpam palam twayam, a person may offer just a drop of water, or you're offering a piece of fruit, you're offering an apple or something. I've told the story many times, how the first time I went to Trinidad, the devotee who picked me up at the airport had bought a red delicious apple, and it was cost her, I think, $2 or something for this one apple, which was a lot. In Trinidad at that time, it was expensive, and it was all wrapped up carefully so it wouldn't get bruised. And for me, it was like, you know, I just came from a place where red delicious apples are in abundance. You know, I came here for some mangoes. But to her, it was a very rare and valuable gift. Yeah, but for Krishna, it's not like that. He gets some ordinary apple or a drop of water. He's actually grateful. What is he being grateful for? He's being grateful that there's love. Why is Krishna grateful for the love? Because Krishna doesn't take being loved for granted. You know, often we take being loved for granted. We think we're owed love. Certainly children think their parents owe them love. I don't know if that's true. But children think like that. My parents owe me love. Certainly parents think their children owe them love. Spouses think their spouse owes them love. We may think that way about our siblings. You know, I've run into many situations among devotees where they think their spiritual master owes them love in a particular way, where they get very hurt and offended if their guru doesn't recognize them or deal with them in a particular way according to their conceptions. So Krishna doesn't think that the jiva owes him love. I was talking to one devotee the other day who's of the persuasion that anyone who is pure in love for Krishna does not have the ability to voluntarily withdraw that love. And so his opinion was that anyone who's not actively loving Krishna must not have any dormant love, because if you had love, you could never withdraw it. But that's not true. Love can be withdrawn. Love can be covered. We experience this all the time in our lives. And Krishna is very cognizant of the fact that our love is voluntary. Although it's natural for us, although it's inherent to us, it's innate to us to love, which is obvious in our material interactions, that we're constantly trying to love and be loved, we have the ability to withdraw from that. Although it's a natural relationship. And Prabhupada says here, it's natural between the Lord and his devotees, but Jivara Swapaya Krishna and Nityadasa, everyone is ultimately a devotee of the Lord. But although the relationship is natural, the jiva can, bahirmukhe, the jiva can turn their face away from the Lord. And this is not a difficult thing to understand. There's a good friend of mine whose adult daughters have little or nothing to do with her. She's estranged from her children. And I'm sure we all know people who have an estrangement between a parent and a child, a mother and children, or father and children. So the relationship between this woman and her children, at least in this life, by a bodily concept, it's there. She's their biological mother, and she raised them as well. But that's just a fact. They have a relationship as mother and daughter. The estrangement doesn't change the fact that that is their relationship. Yes, so Krishna knows that we can become estranged. Exactly how and when and why we become estranged, Prabhupada says Krishna knows the answer to that, but that is not a fruitful discussion. Just like whether a fire is accidental or arson is only a fruitful discussion after the fire is put out. So that is not a fruitful discussion for conditioned souls. But the fact is that conditioned souls are estranged from the Lord. And so when a soul shows love to the Lord is grateful. And the devotee is grateful that the Lord is grateful for their love. Because the devotee knows that the Lord doesn't need that. So there's this reciprocation of transcendent gratitude. The devotee is also grateful because they know that the Lord will only receive their love by mercy. You know, for a conditioned soul who's estranged from the Lord, who's bahirmukhe, who's turned their face from the Lord has no obligation to have a loving relationship with us. Again, we all have experienced of estranged relationships. And the offended party is not at all obligated to restore the relationship with the offenders. By definition, the offended party has no obligation to act in a loving relationship with someone who's been offensive. It's simply an act of kindness. So the jiva is also very grateful for that. Because the jiva cannot have a loving relationship, the conditioned jiva cannot have a loving relationship with the Lord on its own power. An offender cannot have a loving relationship with the person they've offended on their own power. If someone has offended me, that person in and of them, him or herself, cannot have a relationship with me. I have to be forgiving. I have to be merciful. So the intervention of the Lord's Shakti has to be there for the jiva to have, for the conditioned jiva to have, again, this natural as Prabhupada says, natural relationship with the Lord. So, I mean, actually the jiva cannot even turn away from Krishna without the sanction of the Lord. Because the Lord is everywhere and in everything. And not seeing the Lord is actually impossible. But if the jiva wants to turn from the Lord, it's also the Lord's kindness to cover the jiva with illusion. You know, and again, we have so many material examples for this. You know, the parents may be home, but they intentionally don't go into the room where the child is playing so the child can imagine that the parents are not there and that they're free to play on their own. So Krishna hides from the jiva who doesn't want to be aware of the Lord. Krishna hides from them out of his kindness. He doesn't force his presence on those who are turning away from him and those who turn towards him. Prabhupada said we take one step towards him, he takes 10 steps towards us. So both is a sign of mercy. Matasmatir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. So we also have gratitude for the forgetfulness. I am so grateful that you allow me to forget you. That you give me this, I was just hearing Prabhupada say, we have free will and Krishna will never take that away. That you give me such free will that although you're in every atom, Andantarasta Padmanutayantarasta, you're everywhere. You hide yourself so that I look around my life, the world, and Krishna appears to be absent. I can create a whole civilization and life where there's no reference to God at all. How kind he is that I can do that. How kind Krishna is that he can give an atheist intelligence how to deny him. And how kind he is that if we take a little step towards him, we offer him a drop of water in a little tiny cup, we offer him an ordinary apple, that he's so great for himself. So this is the natural relationship between the jiva and God. And who is such a fool? Right? Who is that person? That will not, this is the question, who will not worship the Lord? What a fool. The Lord is so kind, so merciful, so appreciative. How can we not be reciprocating with him? So I could take one question and then I need to go to our...
Oh, okay. What's a lot to do?
Starting in 2 minutes, I can take one.
You better ask your question quick, because she has, Mataji has to leave. No, I'm saying that. If anybody has anything, they need to ask quickly.
I can ask a question if somebody else is jumping in. You could stop the echo. Mother Ramila,
yes.
You mentioned how having a discussion of why we rejected Krishna is fruitless. We'll save that for another time, and we don't have a problem with that. But I was wondering how you handle it, like Sunday feast. You know, people often ask that question. Well, things are so wonderful in the spiritual world. If God is so loving, why did we turn away? And I think it's a legitimate question, an intelligent question.
It is a legitimate
question. Which we're not able to answer. How do you handle that? How do you handle that question?
Well, I've done it differently over the years. At this point, my main way of dealing with it is the way that Maitreya did. And the Sukadeva Goswami answered that when Vidura asked how the eternally conscious jiva becomes covered, Maitreya responded, it's like seeing your own head being cut off. That was his answer. I mean, that's his answer.
I don't understand it.
Well, that's the answer. The answer
okay.
As to how the eternal living entity, eternally conscious, blissful living entity, this is 3.7, Bhagavatam 3.7.10, The living, the Prabhupada's translation is, the living entity is in distress regarding his self-identity. This is the answer. He has no factual background, like a man who dreams that he sees his head cut off. And then the next verse. As the moon reflected on water appears to the seer to tremble due to being associated with the quality of the water, so the self associated with matter appears to have the qualities of matter. That's the answer that's given. That's the answer. The question is asked by Vidura, right? The way he, the question is in 375. The pure soul is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness. Then this is Prabhupada's translation, either due to circumstances, time, situation, dreams, or other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience? He's asking, what is the cause of a living entity being? And that was the answer. It's like seeing your head cut off in a dream. Another where place this is discussed is...
Was that 375, you said?
375 is the question. 37, okay. 10, and 11 is the answer. Also, in Bhagavatam 11:11, Krishna says something interesting to Uddhava. He says, my dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never really bound up or liberated. And if we go on to the next verse, very similar thing. Just as a dream is merely a creation of one's intelligence but has no actual substance, similarly, material lamentation, illusion, happiness, distress, and acceptance of the material body under the influence of Maya are all creations of my illusory energy. In other words, material existence has no essential reality. That's the answer given in the scriptures. And we hear that answer and we go, that's not an answer. That doesn't answer it for me. So my conclusion, based on Srila Prabhupada's also saying that Krishna knows when and how this took place, but this is not something to be discussed in the conditioned state, is that don't discuss it in the conditioned state. And Prabhupada gives the analogy that if a house is on fire, you get out and later you figure out what caused the fire, and that's exactly how it's done. Imagine you're in a house on fire and the firefighters come and you say, how did the fire start? They're like, get out, put out the fire, and then we can understand. And once people are out of illusion, or like if you're sleeping, can you understand you're sleeping when you're sleeping?
No.
Can you understand how you fell asleep when you're sleeping?
No.
Usually we don't even know where we're sleeping when we're sleeping.
Yes. I like that.
Only when you've woken up can you understand when you fell asleep and how you fell asleep and where you fell asleep. When scientists want to study sleep, they don't sleep. They study other people who are asleep. And what happens when we get answers on this question from Shastra, like I just quoted the answers from Shastra or from our acharyas, we tend to filter those answers through the modes and we don't understand them. And then we fight about them. Well, it's like this. No, it's like this. No, it's like this. Because we actually can't understand them in a conditioned state. We're not capable of it. And it's just simply a matter of saying, we will understand this later. And when we understand it, we won't be able to explain it to conditioned souls very well either. It's not really explainable to a conditioned soul. And when, as I say, when you try to explain it, it really people end up understanding something very distorted. So this particular topic, which is a valid question, and it is a question that pretty much everybody asks, cannot be properly understood until one is liberated. It just can't. And you know, it's like, sorry, but it just can't. I mean, we can say the same thing about Leela. You know, Leela cannot be actually understood until one's purified. What we think we understand about Leela in a conditioned state is a distortion. So, You know, people don't like that answer, but sometimes that just is the answer.
You explained it beautifully. That's the best I've ever heard. That's great.
And it's just, you know, again, people don't like it. They're like, but I want to understand it now. But it's just, you really can't.
But your answer doesn't sound like a cop-out. No.
Okay. And it's
sometimes...
You know, I mean, we have this experience in general in spiritual life. We read something in the scripture and we're like, huh? And maybe a month or a year or 5 years later, we go, oh. All right, I got to go to the program. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.